Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Clones, welcome back to the Daily Jungle, and John Gruden, welcome back to the Raider Nation. Now, I've seen a ton of pressers in my day, but I have never seen anything quite like that one. You'll get my take on if that's the right hire, even if all the goons that are listening right now want to talk about Chucky and Mark Davis's matching haircuts. Speaking of you goons, I did my best to not address the tired rumors that were right back in the news. You know, that a certain former Heisman Trophy winner and two-time murderer is the father of a certain reality TV star. Above and beyond that, excellent guests, Alex Collins of the Baltimore Ravens, NFL draft prospect and former Oklahoma Sooner Orlando Brown, and Atlanta Falcons DB Ricardo Allen. In other words, kick-ass show today. Alvy, go ahead and roll. Raider fan, the day that you have dreamed about is finally here. Today is the first day of the full return of John Gruden. And if you didn't think that that was a big deal, then I've got news for you. It's a very big deal. In fact, according to owner Mark Davis, it's the biggest deal. A big bleeping deal. Again, not my words, but his. Raider Nation, and I quote, "This is a big effing deal," end quote. It's Mark Davis now. It's not like most team owners are going to roll out and drop a semi-F-bomb at an introductory news conference. But then again, Mark Davis is not like most team owners. And that was not like most introductory pressers. 16 years after Gruden first left, this was more like some kind of family reunion, complete with Raider fans busting out their old Chucky dolls, the Tuck Rule references. The entire crew was there. Jim Otto, Tim Brown, Charles Woodson, Art Rich Gannon, Tom Flores, Ted Hendricks. The list goes on and on and on. I mean, it was wild. So again, the first question. Davis gets his dude. He gets his dude, but exactly what is he going to get? And what's he going to get for that reported 100 mil? Who is he getting? Is he going to get the guy who was a rock star in his first 5 years, who went 50-30 and he won a Super Bowl? Or are they going to get the guy who went 45-51 with no playoff wins the rest of the way? And another question I have, how is this guy a better coach after being out of the grind for nearly a decade than he was when he left? And don't tell me the guy never left. I keep hearing that. Yeah, well, he never left. He did games. He was on Monday Night Football. He still went to all the meetings. He talked to coaches. He talked to players. Listen, covering a game a week and hosting a quarterback show is not the same thing as grinding it out in the trenches, preparing with players and coaches, and actually doing the job against the very best there is week in and week out, year after year. So don't tell me he never left the game. He didn't leave the game. He left coaching. So he'd tell you that, yeah, well, I didn't lose once in those 8 years. Right, Chuck, but you didn't win once either in those 8 years. I mean, everybody's freaking out like this guy's Belichick, Lombardi, Knoll, Shula, and Walsh all rolled into one. Since when? Since when? Point is, you don't know what you're getting. You have no idea what you're getting, not when you hire a guy who has been out for 8 years. So this guy's name has come up every single year since he went into TV. The question is, why was the time right now? Why did he take this gig? Gruden says, quote, "The timing is right. It really does not have anything to do with the contract. I just want to be a part of the Raiders again," end quote. So dude literally just threw the "it's not about the money" card. Now that's rich. That's really rich. Especially since this guy was already filthy rich. And the owner just made him the highest paid coach in NFL history. But it's not about the money. As always, anytime somebody says it's not about the money, it's about one thing. The money. How does a dude put his name on the line that is dotted? How does that guy, same guy say, and he's about to make 100 mil over 10 years. How does that same guy say, "It's not about the money"? Hey, listen, Chuck, stop. Stop. I don't blame you for doing what you're doing. In fact, I would blame you if you didn't do what you're doing. Just don't tell me it's not about the money. Of course it's about the money. Stop acting like you love the Raiders more than money, because you don't. If you love the Raiders more than money, you would have taken that job the first six times that Mark Davis allegedly offered it to you. And there's more. There's more. He also said at the presser yesterday, he does not know how much the Raiders are going to pay him. Quote, "I don't really know the terms. All I know is that this year I'll be coaching in Oakland and next year I'll be coaching in Oakland." Wait, what? You don't know what the terms of the deal are. You're making 100 mil over 10 years. We all know that, but you yourself don't know. I mean, come on, man. Who quits an amazing job without knowing how much that amazing job they just left is going to pay them now going forward? I mean, why even waste time with that? Why spit that kind of nonsense? Why insult everybody's intelligence with that garbage? If this is how this is going to go, Chuck, if you're going to treat us like straight morons, you best start stacking Lombardis immediately because folks are not going to tolerate it. If you don't want to talk about how much money you make, if you don't want to talk about what they're paying you, I get it. That's fine. Just don't tell us you have no idea how much they're paying you. I mean, I would never call a guy like that. I would never call a guy with that pedigree a liar. I'll just say that there isn't anyone anywhere who believes what you just said. Oh, and if it's not too much to ask, this is directed to you clones. If it's not too much to ask, can we just stick to the football aspect of this? Because I know that for whatever reason, a number of you have a fascination with the way Mark Davis looks. Not me, not at all, not ever. So don't come in here trying to tell me that Mark Davis cuts his own hair, or that Kirk Heinrich cuts Davis's hair, or that they cut each other's hair, or that they do it with a spoon, or that the only reason he hired Gruden is because they have the same barber, or that dude owns a Flowbee or some other contraption that functions as both a hair clipper and a vacuum cleaner. Don't come in here with any of that. It's extremely weak sauce, and you need to save that garbage for your local show. So if you want to thumb out a tweet asking whether or not he slammed that bowl of soup before they put that bowl on his head for that haircut, man, just delete your account because that's not what I'm about. That's not what I'm about. I'm about what happens on the field. So let's talk about that. Alex Collins is my guest. Alex, good morning. Great to have you on. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. How are you?
Good, good, bud. I'm doing really well. Lots to talk about. Let me first talk about the end of the season. You came into week 17 with a chance to reach the playoffs. You had it ripped from you in the final minute of the game. I mean, not a great thing to bring up, but I got to ask, what's going through your head when Andy Dalton hits Tyler Boyd for that touchdown with only 44 seconds left?
It was heart crushing because the whole time on the sideline, we just went down and we scored. We're up by 3 points. You know, we think the game's over. We got them all the way down to this fourth. And 15, fourth and 15 from maybe like the 45-yard line. And then, you know, just from the momentum swing and everything, it was just heart-crushing just to see him catch that ball down the middle and score a touchdown. You know, it was just, you know, out of all the possible outcomes, you know, the worst one. So it was just heart-crushing.
Alex Collins joining me. You know, I can respect that, certainly, but it seems to me like there's this whole other level. I mean, it's one thing to have the situation, the down and distance, but can you explain what it's like to put in the work that you all put in all year long to put yourself in that position to get to the postseason and then just miss it? What about that angle when you consider the sacrifices you all made?
Oh, definitely. We took in a lot of sacrifices, and just from the season itself, you know, having a lot of ups and downs. You know, we win a few, we lose a few. We don't know where we're going to end up towards the end of the season. And then just to have that hope, just knowing that there's that possibility that we can go, and just to give those veterans that opportunity to compete in the playoffs again, and just being there and having that experience. You know, it was all there, and it was all on the line, and just to have it taken away. You know, all of that hard work and effort you put in, just, you know, it's hard crushing.
Clones, give me one moment so I can talk to you about stamps.com. Now, here's a New Year's resolution that you can actually keep. Add Stamps.com to your business and save a ton of time and money this year. Now, I'm going to be very honest with you. I don't need that resolution this year because I've already done it, and I wish I had done it sooner. Stamps.com has saved me so much time and so much money. You see, Stamps.com brings all the amazing services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your computer. Stamps.com is the better way to get postage. You simply use your computer to print U.S. postage for any letter or package, any class of mail, and you let the mailman pick it up. You don't leave your office. There's no more lugging mail to the post office. There is no more hassle. So Stamps.com saves you time and money. Almost everything you can do at the post office, you can do right from your desk. Stamps.com. Convenient, easy, reliable, efficient. And those are all the reasons why I use Stamps.com. And right now, you too can enjoy the Stamps.com service with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale. Are you ready for a happier new year? Then go to stamps.com. Hit the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in jungle. That's stamps.com. Enter jungle. Once again, to take advantage of this great offer, stamps.com. Enter jungle. That's stamps.com. And now it's back to our daily jungle. We're talking Alex Collins. You know, no doubt, you're not going to make it about yourself, but let me have you make it about yourself for a minute, because while the season did not go the way you wanted, you yourself had an amazing year. I mean, if we go back a few months, you were with the Seahawks at the end of the preseason. So at that time, what was your mindset, and where were you emotionally when you found out they let you go?
My mindset, emotionally, I was all over the place, just not knowing, you know, what to do, being released, and just having to start. So my mindset was just all over the place emotionally as well. But, you know, getting that new opportunity, you know, with just me, you know, like being a hard worker, just trying to take the most advantage of that opportunity I had, you know, just going over to Baltimore, I just, you know, made this pack and made these goals that every day, no matter the circumstance, every opportunity I get, I just want to give it 110% effort and, you know, wish for the best as far as the outcome, you know, as long as I'm just putting it all into that and doing all that I have, you know, at the end of the day, whether it worked out or not, I knew in the back of my mind that I gave it my all and I gave it my best effort.
Yeah, see, to me, that's the thing, because guys raved about that very fact, that when you signed with the practice squad, and one of the things that you said was you were going to approach that opportunity like you were a starting player. You were going to attack it like you were the starting player. So that work ethic you speak of, where did the attitude, the mindset, and that work ethic come from?
It just came from a long journey, and, you know, just, you know, always having to persevere through, you know, all the different circumstances, and just, you know, you never start off at the top, especially, you know, in this profession. And then, you know, I came in there with that work ethic, you know, just to push myself and then always just believing in myself, because that's where it starts. You know, you have to see yourself, you know, before others can see you there. And that's just the vision I have for myself, you know, while I'm here on the practice squad. I just saw myself as the starter, and I, you know, took in that mindset of I need to do all it takes and more to get to that position, because, you know, first have to see it to believe it, then you have to put in the work to make it possible. And that's all I did. I just put my head down and just marked that X on the calendar and just kept giving it 100%, 10% effort, just knowing that, you know, the hard work will eventually pay off, you know, with opportunity.
Yeah, Alex, I'm not sure what
it
is.
Always,
but
being prepared for every moment.
Right, and you were. When you got that opportunity, you made the most of it. I'm not sure how to describe it. Help me with this. Like, I don't want to say that you run angry, because I don't think you're angry. I'm talking to you right now. You don't sound angry. But, man, there's something. There's something there. I don't know what that mission is, what that chip is, but you run with something. There's some it. How would you describe your running style, and how do you think it? How would you describe it?
I think you described it perfectly, and that's exactly my mindset. When I'm out there, I just have this relentless mindset, and it's just I'm always in my mind when I'm out there, and it's just, you know, I tell myself, and I put all of these different thoughts in my head. It's just, it allows me to play with that passion and that aggression that the position needs, but you know, sometimes you can overdo it and cloud your mind, but I always try to do it to that point where, you know, I'm running. running with that anger and that passion, but at the same time, I'm playing smart and making the right decisions out there. So that's definitely my mindset, just trying not to, like, my goal, like, as a runner especially, is just always to not let the first person tackle me, like, to have this mindset that it's going to take more than one of these guys to bring me down. And that's why I just run so angrily, because, you know, I just kind of, like, look at it, it's like, almost like as an embarrassment to let the first guy bring me down, like there was no effort at all. I wanted to feel like that. You know, I want to make them, like, furious. So I just run with this anger and make it hard for those guys to bring me down.
Seems to me it's personal. You know, guys always say, it's not personal, it's business. Let me tell you something, it's personal. It's almost always personal, and the great ones make it personal. So I don't think there's anything to apologize for. Now, look, a lot of people are familiar with your background in Irish dancing, but you are multidimensional beyond that. Growing up, you were an excellent lacrosse player. How did you first get started in lacrosse? What did you like about that sport?
I first got started in lacrosse. I was a junior in high school, and they were having tryouts. It was after football season, and I wasn't even going to the tryouts. I was in jeans. I was in a collar shirt leaving school, and one of our football coaches, Coach Rose, he was the head lacrosse coach out there coaching those guys, and he called me over, and then everybody was just practicing the face-off, and then he asked me to try it, and then I just got down there, and then I just was beating everybody at the face-off, and I was just thinking, like, you know, I could be really good at this, and then that's what originally got me out there. And then I originally started off just only doing face-off, and I got involved more on the field and just grew a passion for it. It was just a lot of fun out there if you're throwing a different sport and having that new experience of getting better, working hard, trying to outwork guys, and just seeing that, you know, the progression, it just made me hungry to want to be even better.
Then on top of that, you're one of the nominees for the Vizio Top Value Performer Award, especially coming out the year you had. What's that award about? How can the fans go about voting for that award?
The TVP Award, it recognizes the player who on-field performance most exceeds the value of their contract. And, you know, just to be, you know, qualified for that, it's an honor, you know, for people, you know, who watch me play and to think and to recognize me and to see that, you know, the hard work and effort I've put into doing that is, you know, I've exceeded the value of my contract. It's just an honor, you know. I go in there just with my heart, put my head down and work hard and just, you know, hoping for the best out there on the Sundays, and just to be put in that category, you know, is just, you know, I just feel like all that hard work and effort is paying off, and I'm, you know, in that right direction. I just need to keep pushing.
Let's talk about Nick Saban, and now that he's done everything there is to do in the college game, 5 championships in 9 years, 6 overall, he's 66. Does the guy have one last challenge? He's got no more challenges in the college game, so would he take one more run in the NFL? Does he have some unfinished business in the NFL? Not according to the New York Post, at least as it relates to the New York Giants. The Post is reporting that Nick Saban is not interested in the New York Giants head coaching job. Right. Okay, what are you going to tell me next? The sky is blue, water is wet. I mean, why the hell would that guy have any interest in the New York Giants? For who? For what? Not for NFL Jack. He already makes NFL Jack at Alabama. And then if not for the money, then what? Because Nick Saban has something to prove? He's the greatest college coach ever with 6 titles, 5 in 9 years, and he's got it locked and loaded so he can do it again, not only next year, but maybe multiple times. So why the hell would that guy walk away from all of that? And for the Giants of all things, I mean, does that look like a guy who wants to deal with the New York media? Does that look like a guy who wants to deal with any media? Much less the New York media. Does that look like a guy who wants to deal with Odell Beckham? Does that look like a guy who wants to deal with Eli Apple? And if you were Nick Saban, who would you rather have as your quarterback? Tua or Eli? Did you see Tua Monday night? I know Nick Saban did. Have you seen Eli the last, I don't know, 5 years? No-brainer. And so is staying where this guy is. I mean, sure, as beaten down as the Giants are, that is still a great job. That's still one of the best jobs in the NFL. It's still a great job, but it's not better than the job that Nick Saban has right now. Hell, the Tide could probably beat the Giants right now. Of course this guy's not going to the Giants. Hey, look, New York City's awesome. New York City is awesome. I know. I go there 8 times during the NFL season for the NFL on CBS. I love Manhattan. I love New York. Great, great town. I understand that the restaurant scene there is probably even a little bit better than the one in Tuscaloosa. But does Saban look like a guy or sound like a guy who's looking for Michelin star restaurants? No. The guy just wants his Weather Channel, his Little Debbie's, total control of all football operations and his team. Listen, says a hell of a lot about what he's done at Alabama, that leaving the Tide for the Giants, one of the premier organizations in all of professional sports, would be considered a step down, but it would be considered a step down. It would be for that guy. There's no way this guy's leaving Alabama to be the Giants head coach. In fact, mark this down. Mark this down. The only thing that would make me think that he was going to leave the Giants or leave to be the Giants head coach would be if he called a press conference and said, I'm not going to be the Giants head coach.
I'm not going to be the Alabama coach.
I'm not going to be the Giants coach.
I shouldn't even have to comment on this. I think I've said this over and over and over again.
I'm not going to be the Giants coach.
I'm not going to be the Alabama coach.
I think I've said this over and over and over again. I'm not going to be the Giants
coach.
I'm not
going to be the Alabama coach.
If that guy were to say, I'm not going to be the Giants coach.
I'm not going to be the Alabama coach.
Then you know it's an absolute lock that he is going to be the Giants coach. Until he says, I'm not going to be the Giants coach.
I'm not going to be the Alabama coach.
Then you'll know. Of course, this guy's not going to the Giants. I mean, come on. Or even the NFL for that matter. Why? He's 66 years old, greatest college coach ever, and about ready to stack another title or two or three. Did you see how they won that title? Did you see who they won that title with? Have you seen the youth that stepped up on the biggest stage? He's not going to the Giants.
I shouldn't even have to comment on this. I think I've said this over and over and over again.
I'm not going to be a Giants coach.
I'm not going to be the Alabama coach.
Now, when he says that, he'll be the Giants coach. But until he says that, he's not going to be the Giants coach. Dear Van Smack, the only way Nick Saban would come to the NFL is if it were a contender. He has proven everything he has besides chasing Bear Bryant in college football. If he did come to the NFL, he would need to be promised to win. And what better team than the Patriots? In light of the Belichick-Brady drama, one of them is headed out sooner, and we all have a feeling who. Saban would head to New England and run with Brady for a couple of seasons to try to rip a Lombardi. It only makes sense. He ain't heading to New York or some 9-7 team like Gruden with the $100 million. Saban would need a trophy as a guarantee. Simon in Crush City. The Astros. War the Astros making the offseason moves to get better. All right, see, that's interesting. He's got a near sure thing. I mean, there's no such thing as a sure thing, and especially in the pro game and even in the college game. But he's got the closest thing to a sure thing with Alabama. So why would he leave that? There is no such thing as a sure thing in the NFL. The closest thing to a sure thing in the NFL is just that, the Patriots. But even though there's got to be friction, I don't think there's nearly as much friction as we're led to believe from that ESPN column. But there's friction. Of course there's friction between Brady and Belichick and Kraft. There's some friction there, but not enough that this guy would bounce and not enough that Kraft would let him bounce. So I don't see that happening. So again, you're going to say to me that Saban is going to give up what he has. I mean, the whole kingdom in Tuscaloosa. This guy can do what he wants, when he wants. He's got the ultimate hammer in his hand, right? The most powerful guy in the state. You're not going to have that kind of power. You're not going to have that kind of authority in the NFL. And he's going to leave for what, a 40-year-old quarterback? Who, let's face it, still an amazing player at 40, but not what he once was. So, no, he's not going there either. I don't see that guy leaving for any other coaching job. Once again, for who or for what? Unfinished business, I don't buy it. More money, How much more money? He can't spend what he has already. He already makes NFL money. What I'm saying is this. I don't think for that particular guy, there is a better job in the NFL than the job he has right now. That's what I'm saying. Subject of this is, I would do just about anything to see Saban have to deal with OBJ. Yeah, right? So would I. That's why it's not going to happen. Deal with OBJ, deal with Eli Apple, deal with Eli Manning. Who would you rather have as a quarterback right now, Tua or Eli Manning? He's not going anywhere. Dear Jim, Nick Saban has everything to prove. He needs a challenge, and he needs a change. Yours, the rest of us outside of Tuscaloosa looking for a title. Ben in Tallahassee, warm meat grilling T-bones in the front driveway. All right, now we're on to something. Now we're talking. I want to hear from somebody grilling T-bones on a Wednesday. Front yard or backyard or side yard? Or are you not grilling at all, but rather smoking? The Masterbuilt smoker. Yeah, baby. It's that time of year. Of tackle for Oklahoma. Let me run down this resume very quickly. A unanimous first-team All-American selection this season. A finalist for the Outland Trophy. He announced his intention to declare for the 2018 NFL Draft. Oklahoma 12-2 on the season. They were the Big 12 champs, and the draft is coming up April 26th through the 28th in Arlington. Orlando Brown joins me in studio. Orlando, what's going on? How are you?
I'm excited, man. Thank you for having me on here.
Excited to be here or excited about your future life?
Overall, all of it, man.
I like it. All right, so you know, you've had this amazing journey to this point, which I want to get into in a minute, but take me back first to the decision to enter the NFL draft. What kind of conversations did you have with the people around you, and ultimately, what led you to that decision?
Yeah, you know, obviously, it took a lot, you know, for me to come out this year. You know, I spoke to my coaches. You know, they had some good things to say. You know, I talked to my mentor, Jamal Brown, who's, you know, been in my life, man. He's had a huge influence on me and all of my success. And, you know, we sat down and we spoke, and, you know, he kept it real with me. You know, he told me all of the things, honestly, going into this season that I had to work on to better myself or, you know, put myself in the best position coming out of college this year. And, you know, man, we were able to take care of business. And, you know, I still got a lot of things that I'm working on. But pretty much, you know, Jamal and my coaches.
Yeah, I think that's how you go about that, right? You find the people that are not going to tell you what you want to hear, but what you need to hear. Mm-hmm. Somebody who will be real with you. But, you know, if we're being real, your journey is amazing. You know, I ran down your list of accomplishments at the very top. It's a great resume.
Yeah.
But if you go even way back, like say, for instance, the eighth grade.
Yeah.
legend has it, my man, that you weighed over 400 pounds in middle school. Mm-hmm. Number one, is that accurate?
Yeah.
And if so, what were you like as a player back then?
Yeah. So I was about 6'6", 450. That was height and weight.
Dude, 450.
450.
In middle school.
Yeah, about biscuit away from probably 500, honestly. But, yeah, amazing. Man, I was pretty big. You know, I did a lot of eating. My dad and my mom, they didn't let me start really playing football till eighth grade, which was like my first year. And, I mean, I was a couch potato, video game kid. Probably at the most I did going outside was maybe swimming in the pool in the neighborhood.
All right, so now your father, of course, was Orlando Brown Zeus. He was an amazing NFL player. I want to talk to you about him in a minute. But if we skip ahead, then you're playing at Peachtree Ridge in Georgia.
Yeah.
And there's a story that your coach there, Mark Fleetwood, showed you clips of yourself and another player who had been there before, and your reaction was, quote, "Coach, I'm awful."
Yeah.
He says that he told you you were not awful. You simply had to make some changes. What do you remember about that film session? And then what changes did you make?
Yeah, so it's crazy. Basically, what led to that film session, we had played two games up until that point. Man, I probably had four or five holding penalties, and I had given up three or four sacks. And they weren't good players, talented players. I just really was out of shape. I spent that whole summer, you know, doing like most kids do, taking the visits, not in the summer program. And, so, you know, he sat me down. We talked about it. You know, he showed me Alex Jarugi, who was very similar in size to me, but probably about 30 or 40 pounds less. And he was doing all the same things that I was supposed to be doing in our offense. And, you know, he just told me, kept it real. He said, you know, you need to get better. And I told him, I was like, man, I'm with you. I suck. So seriously. So, you know, from that on, I think I kind of learned as a person, as a player, you know, to grind.
Orlando Brown is in studio with me right now. So as I mentioned, a lot of people remember your father, Zeus. Yeah. Orlando Brown, he was an amazing offensive lineman. He had a great NFL career. And there was that moment, just unbelievable moment where referee Jeff Triplett threw that penalty flag and it hit your father in his eye. And it left him blind in one eye. Yeah. He was out of the game for three seasons. Yep. I know that was a really challenging time for your family.
Yeah.
But then your father came back to the NFL.
Yep.
He played for the Baltimore Ravens, and it gave the two of you a chance to reconnect.
Yeah.
So what was it like growing up and playing football as the son of Zeus Brown?
Yeah. You know, growing up, man, even before I started playing, you know, we had always talked about it because, you know, he knew how bad I wanted to play it. He just didn't want me to play it because of injuries. And he had played with guys before that, you know, were getting hurt early on in their careers and late in their careers. And he didn't want me having any nagging injuries. But, you know, the thing about my dad, man, that, you know, I learned, man, is you know, really just to work, you know, and he kind of, you know, put that into me at an early age that, you know, I had to grind to get where I want to be. And, you know, man, I've just been fortunately blessed to have that.
You know, you might have got that grind from him and that passion.
Yeah.
But, man, he was an intimidating dude. And not just in size. I mean, you've got his size. But, I mean, he was nasty, man. He was intimidating. He was dominant.
Yeah.
So when he finally let you play and he watched you play, what was the kind of mindset that he tried to instill in you? What was his message to you?
Yeah. His message, man, you know what I mean, was to, you know, be as dominant as possible. You know, he would leave my games if I wasn't getting personal fouls. You know,
walk that back. Wait a minute. If you, most are like, hey man, don't do anything to hurt the team. Yeah. Don't get a personal foul. He would leave. Like, he wanted you to get 15-yard penalties.
Oh yeah, yeah. He would leave my games if I'm not getting personal fouls. Man, there were, you know, several games up until a certain point in eighth grade, you know, where he was leaving if I wasn't over there slamming.
Dude, what was your coach saying when you were getting personal fouls? Because Pops had to have it.
Yeah, I mean, fortunately we were winning, so I mean, it wasn't as much as an issue as you think, but you know, I played on a really good team, but it had to happen. You know, I wanted him at my games.
You know, I wanted him at my games. At one point, did he not break out Adam Sandler's Water Boy?
Yes.
Did he not show you that to motivate you? What did you think when you saw that, and what did he say to you?
Yeah, it was weird, man. It was weird. Like, it's eighth grade again, first time playing football, probably around, I think it was like my first game, and you know, he sits me down and, you know, he's like, this is how you got to play. This is how you got to go hard. And, you know, imagine.
Like the water boy?
Like the water boy. So imagine he's talking about your mom or something like that, you know. So it was weird, man. My dad's a crazy guy.
You know, he sadly passed away in 2011. He was just 40. Mm-hmm. You miss him still?
Absolutely.
Your guy, right?
Absolutely, man. I mean, I miss him. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I've been fortunate that God forgot to bring in people, you know, like Jamal into my life. You know, and, you know, the impact he's had is, you know, very similar to what my dad had.
Orlando Brown joining me in studio. Now, again, this was not easy because he passed away and then you moved. And as somebody, I mean, you were very close to your father. You were young. Mm-hmm. And obviously at that point, it was kind of hard to apply yourself in school. You were thinking about football. Mm-hmm. You thought you were going to Tennessee. You were all set to go to the SEC. Mm-hmm. What happened?
Oh, man. Scholarship gone. You know what I mean? Basically, long story short.
Gone when? Like, they ripped it from you when?
2 days before signing day. Hmm. So, you know, long story short, I was committed in May to, you know, Tennessee. May 2nd is my birthday, 2013. So I had been committed almost a year, taking four or five, you know, close, maybe unofficial visits up there. You know, fell in love with the coaching staff, got around the players and everything, completely cut my ties off to any other colleges. And, you know, man, as signing day started approaching, they started asking about my grades, and they had never asked before. And so, you know, they're like, you know, what's going on? Why don't you have a test score? Why won't you release your transcripts? So, you know, I released my transcripts and my test scores, and it's like, dude, I got a 12 on the ACT. You know, I basically slept through that whole thing. I had like a 1.7, 1.9, I think, overall cumulative GPA. You know, man, it was just tough for me, you know what I mean, going through that whole time. And, they took the scholarship 2 days before signing day because they had basically oversigned. So I think it was 35 people committed. They had 33 scholarships. So it was me and another guy that actually got our scholarships, you know, taken. So, yeah, I mean, it was a blessing to Scott.
Yeah, I was going to say, all is well that ends well. But as you look back on that, I mean, were you upset that they ripped that Scully from you? Or were you owning that, hey, I just didn't do the work. I was in a bad place.
Yeah, you know, man, I was in a bad place. You know what I mean? I can admit that. You know, as I've gotten older, I haven't, you know, made that mistake again of, you know, making the wrong decisions or anything like that, trying to stay away from those things. But, man, I'm glad it happened. You know what I mean? You know, thank Buzz Jones, man. Thank that staff for, you know, seeing what they saw because – if that didn't happen, man, I wouldn't be here today.
Listen, you have your degree, right?
I don't. I'm actually 10 to 12 hours away.
Okay, so you're close. Are you going to get it? Are you going to finish
absolutely,
up?
Absolutely.
All right, so why is that so important? I mean, why do we go to college? To get a good job. You're going to get a really, really good job. Why is it so important for you to finish that off?
Yeah, you know, man, Jamal's been on me about it. You know what I mean? He's on me, you know, constantly about making sure I get my degree. You know, obviously he has his. You know, he understands my mom doesn't have hers. My dad didn't have his. He went to college for 5 years. So, you know, that's what I want to do, man. I want to make sure that I get that and, you know, for my family and for my kids, hopefully someday.
We're talking to Orlando Brown. He's in studio. He's getting ready for the NFL draft. He's going to be a high pick. Now, last month, you and Baker Mayfield were in the ATL for the College Football Awards show. Yep. You brought with it a fashion sense. You had a sharp sweater. Man, the foxtail. Yeah. Hey, you got a foxtail today, right? Can you get up real quick to the TV audience? Show this.
Yeah.
Dude, that's nice. That's really nice. All right. So what's your approach when it comes to fashion? Yep. And have you figured out what you're going to wear the night of the draft?
You know, man, if I'm fortunate to be there, then it is what it is. But, yeah, man, I mean, when it comes to fashion, that's another thing I learned, you know, from college ball. But, yeah, man, when it comes to fashion, I love it. You know, not a lot of big guys, I think, are into it. Not a lot of big guys understand how to dress and where to shop at. So, you know, man, I think it's something that I kind of take pride in.
You know, Baker did a full breakdown that night of the outfit, and he's got and he had a pretty strong analysis. Listen, that's a guy who gets a lot of attention. Everybody's got an opinion about him. But, I mean, you've lived with the guy. You know the guy. You've been in the trenches with the guy. You've blocked for the guy.
Yeah.
How would you describe Baker to somebody who's never actually met him?
Yeah, very passionate about everything that he does. And, you know, whether that be off the field, man, in the weight room, whether that be in the classroom, you know, board work, man, whatever it may be, he's very passionate. And, you know, I think a lot of the things that you see off the field kind of comes from, you know what I mean, that personality on the field. He's not really different, you know, off or on. You know, he is who he is. He's true to himself. And, you know, at the end of the day, man, as a person and me being one of his friends, I wouldn't have it any other way. He's an amazing person.
Let me ask you something. I mean, you're going to do your job no matter what. Your job is to block for the guy behind you. But if that guy behind you has got that it or he's got that something and you guys are tight, will you give even a little bit more because that guy is that guy?
Yeah. You know, as an offensive tackle, man, playing for him for the past 3 years, his swag and his juice, man, that's kind of what, you know, one of the reasons on film that I'm able to stay so consistent is because of guys like him. You know what I mean? The guard next to me, Ben Powers, Eric Wren, our center, our right guard, Drew Samir, and Bobby Evans. And, you know, man, just what they were able to do for me, you know, as far as an energy level, man, just giving me that confidence to go out there and play, man. And Bake does the same thing. And he basically drives, you know, our offense as a whole.
Former Sooner Orlando Brown joining me in studio for a few moments, and this time is going fast. Listen, in addition to your reputation for being one of the best dressed, you've also got a rep as being one of the better trash talkers in the game. And this is so good. You said, quote, I figure out these guys' backgrounds.
Yeah.
I figure out where they're from. Yeah. I try to find out the type of situation they come from, end quote. Listen, how much prep work goes into being a great trash talker?
Yeah, a lot, man. Believe it or not, it's a lot more film work than anything. But
lay it out for me. Give me an example. Like, how do you go about getting ready to trash talk a dude?
Man, you know, I mean, I basically like to watch, you know, I'll watch, let's say, first few games from the beginning of the season, you know, and then I like to watch a few games from middle of the season and a game at the end. Then from there, I'll go and find Twitter, Instagram, all that type of stuff, bio looks. You know what I mean? Especially all those different things. You know, but it just comes from, you know, my confidence in my game first.
All right, so the draft is coming up in a little more than 3 months. The combine starts next month. What kind of work are you doing right now to get ready?
Yeah, a lot of different things. You know, obviously flexibility has been a big thing of mine that I need to work on. You know, I've been doing some stuff with, you know, position work, working on hands, a different type of footwork. Obviously getting more upper body strength and, you know, doing my best to make sure that I'm as well-rounded as possible.
All right, so what's your message to NFL teams who are thinking about drafting you? What kind of a player are they going to get?
Yeah, they're going to get a hard worker. You know what I mean? You're going to get someone that's completely focused on the game, someone that loves football and is passionate about it. And, you know, man, I'm more than ready, you know, for it to, you know, be a part of my life for a long time.
You know, Orlando, when you think about how you're ready for this, when you think about what's gone into this, the life that you've had, the way you came up with your father, have you given thought to what it's going to feel like when you hear your name called at the NFL draft?
Yeah. You know, man, when that comes, it's going to be, you know, nothing more than a blessing, man, because, you know, after everything that I've been through in life, you know, to come out, you know, at that point, which isn't the highest point of my life, you know, of what I expect, you know, I hope to be a Hall of Famer someday in the league. And, you know, man, to have that name being called, you know, man, it means a lot to me. You know, my dad was undrafted. You know, my mentor, Jamal, you know, he went 13. So, you know, man, you know, my university hasn't, you know, had the opportunity to, you know, have too many guys, you know, go in the first round. And hopefully, you know what I mean, I can do what I need to do. But, yeah, man, I mean, it's a blessing.
The Falcons are at Philadelphia Saturday, 4:35 p.m. Eastern. We are joined by safety Ricardo Allen. Ricardo, it's great to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you?
Good. I'm great. Listen, I know you've already turned the page. You're already moving on and focusing on Philadelphia for Saturday, but can you take us back to last Saturday here in Los Angeles? You go on the road. You go up against a really explosive offense. You shut them down. You hold them to 13 points. What was the defense's approach going into that game, and then how proud of you were you of the way everybody showed up in that game?
Oh, man, you know, we were real proud about, you know, the output that we put on there. We just knew that we could have done a little better, man. We know every week we always pushing to be better. But, you know, going into that game, our game plan was, you know, just to make our plays when we got our chance. We all said in our secondary and in the defensive room that we're going to say that we have to make at least five plays each, you know. And if we did that and we came out on top with everybody making at least their five plays, we knew that we were going to be in a good, you know, good spot. And that's what we did, man. We went out there. We made our one-on-one tackles. When we got an open field and when we had our chance to make our tackles with some of the best, and we did.
We're talking to Ricardo Allen. You know, one of the things about being here in Los Angeles, there's always this rap about, is it a good sports town? Are they taking to the Rams? The fact of the matter is, they had an unbelievable season. And it's one thing, you have to win in this town, but you have to win a certain way in this town. And they were doing that. Man, there was a buzz. And the celebrities were out. Yet after that win, you gave your jersey to somebody in the stands, and you were signing autographs in the corner of the end zone. So what did it feel like to go on the road, not only win, but to celebrate with fans after a playoff win?
Oh, man, it always feels good, man. You know, the one thing I always try to do, man, I always try to show everybody that we're just normal people, man. I know they come in there and they watch us and, you know, some of them, you know, think that, you know, we're rude and things like that. But, man, you know, I just always want to give back, man, because I understand where I come from, and I understand that I used to be one of those people, you know, looking up to the guys on the field also. So, you know, man, just to go out there after the game, man, those fans were, you know, they were nice. They talked to me, man, you know. Like I said, I always, you know, instead of me trading jerseys, unless, like, no one respects the problem to trade jerseys, I'd rather just get my jersey out.
Ricardo Allen, my guest, when was the last time you traded a jersey with somebody?
I think this year it was Vikings with Thielen.
Adam Thielen, right? Of the Vikes.
Yep, Adam Thielen was my last trade.
How come?
Because, man, I enjoy where he come from. I enjoy his grind. I just enjoy it. We come from kind of the same spot. You know, he was undrafted, but I was a low draft pick, and I was put on practice squad. He was a practice squad guy, too, so I got a lot of respect for his game. And for him to, you know, transition to what he is and becoming one of the, you know, the best wide receivers in the league, man, I got a lot of respect for that.
Yeah, makes sense to me. Ricardo Allen joining us. Now, down the stretch of the season, when you guys were fighting for a playoff spot, one of the things that you talked about was the team just had to, quote, do us better. What do you mean by that, and what's it mean to the Atlanta Falcons to do us better, Atlanta Falcon football?
Oh, man, just to go out there, you know, just doing us better. You know, last year, you know, in the beginning of the season, we were getting a lot of turnovers. And a lot of people kept saying, you know, like, oh, we wasn't getting enough turnovers, we wasn't getting enough stops. But when we were getting turnovers, we messed up a couple of them by having, you know, penalties called. And I think we had, like, five interceptions and, like, one forced fumble or something that was taken away from us for a penalty. And I just said, you know, if we just do that better and just think about how much that could have changed our game, that could have changed our season going into, you know, the playoffs. That could have changed, you know, everything going into the playoffs. So, and we just, you know, did us better, did us a little sharper, you know, just, you know, focused a little more, studied a little more, tackled a little better, you know, went a little more on third down, man. It wasn't nothing dramatic that we had to change. We didn't have to change the game plan. We didn't have to change, you know, everything big. We just had to, you know, get our little details right and play a little better, and that's what we did.
Falcons and Eagles coming up this weekend. Now, as a safety, part of your job, obviously, is to bring the lumber and lay a big hit on an opposing player. But it seems to be this pattern now that when you deliver a big hit, then you get a notice in your locker that you have been selected for a, quote, random drug test. What's your reaction when you see that? What's that all about?
Oh, man, it's a funny joke to me, man. It's just, you know, a lot of players in the league, a lot of players around the league, as soon as you have, like, that game that, you know, you've been looking for, that game you've been working for, you have that pick or that play, you know, that big hit that you won for the next week, for some reason, it's just always a coincidence that you come back and you got a note in your locker to be able to get that, you know, that random drug test.
Does it feel random to you?
Oh, it feels not random at all. But, you know, it feels random, so just go with it.
If by random you mean not random at all, then yes, it's random. Well, my guest.
Yes.
Listen, it's not just that you're a safety, but you've got the ability to play all over the defense. How much do you enjoy bouncing down to the nickel spot or a corner spot as well?
Oh, man, I enjoy that, man, because, you know, sometimes being in the middle of the field, you know, when you're playing on such a, you know, a good defense that we've become, you know, you don't get a lot of action. I think last game I got one open field tackle. And that's why, you know, my tackles this year have went, you know, dramatically down because, you know, I feel like our defense has gotten so much better. So when it's able to, you know, throw me around and just throw me in other places, you know, maybe for, you know, injury or maybe just because they want to see a different look or something, you know, I enjoy it because I enjoy the challenge. And I just enjoy being in different spots. I enjoy being, you know, a part of the game every play. So it doesn't matter, man. I just enjoy a challenge. I love it.
Atlanta Falcon, Ricardo Allen joining me for a few more moments. Now, you guys go on the road against the top seed in the NFC. Now, listen, you go to Vegas, they've got you as the favorites in the game. In fact, you go most places, you're seen as the favorites in the game. So what's the mindset on Saturday? Do you approach it like you're the favorites, or are you going in like you're the underdogs?
Oh, man, we're as a team, we enjoy being underdogs. You know, I never look at the lines. I never look at what other people say because the only people who know what's going to come out with the outcome of the game are the people who are really going through the going through the week and doing the studying and actually putting the work in. So I try my hardest not to look at any of the lines or like actually look at what anybody has to say about us or in our matchup, man. I just try to go out there and just, you know, give our all and just, you know, if I come with it and my players come with it and my teammates come with it, I think we'll be doing really good down there.
All right, so before you go, what about this? You're playing a team that lost its starting quarterback, and a starting quarterback who many thought might be the MVP. They're going with a backup quarterback, and with that backup quarterback, the offense for them really has not clicked the last five quarters that he's played, so it might be easy to get a little bit overconfident, might be easy to let your guard down just a little bit. How do you make sure that you and the rest of the defense don't let that happen?
You remember that, you know, 2 years ago he was considered a franchise guy. You know, a couple of years ago, he was considered one of the best quarterbacks in the league that was throwing the ball, you know, everywhere without interception. He had that click. And, you know, you can't just think because, you know, Carson Wentz was doing amazing. But because, you know, Nick Foles was maybe the backup, he didn't get as many, you know, game reps with that offense. He didn't get to throw, you know, as many good passes with that offense or go through them, you know, as much with them in practice. I think Nick Foles is a pretty good quarterback. I think he can get it done. I think he's a quarterback that we're going to have to go out there and battle against. And I got all the respect in the world for him because I've seen him do it when he had an offense, you know, a whole year. So you got to go out there and you got to treat him just as good as you want to treat Carson Wentz. I don't look down on anybody because I know in this league that if you made it here and you made it long enough, you're doing something pretty good.
Ricardo Allen, my guest. Ricardo, one thought about the Super Bowl, and you've covered it so many times before, but let me just ask you this. How did you personally process what happened in that game? I mean, is that out of sight, out of mind? I'm never thinking about that ever again. It never happened. Or can you somehow process that into fuel and use it as motivation?
Man, I use it as fuel. And one of the things that I had to do is, man, I had to go listen to some LeBron stuff. I had to go listen to, you know, some, you know, just, you know, people who've been into that position and have, you know, maybe, you know, haven't worn as many times as they wanted to or worn all the ones they've been to. And you have to take that and you have to take that as motivation because we understand now what it means to be there. Now we just got to understand what it means to get back and also, you know, take it a week at a time but also finish.
Is there a common denominator or a common thought, like guys who have been through something like that before, how they were able to use that and process that and get beyond it? Like, what's the common theme or common thread?
You got to understand, it's a sports mentality. It's a thing that, you know, you don't win every game. And, yeah, that may be, you know, one of the most important, you know, moments at that time. But you can't be stuck on that because if you're stuck on that, like, for the rest of your time being, then that may get in the way of, you know, getting yourself a chance to go again. So, yeah, it fuels us and it fuels me, but I don't let that get into my way of holding me down because I have lost the game, because I have won a couple games after that. So I got to realize I'm going to take the you know, the good things from that game also, and I'm going to take some of the bad things, and I'm going to take that as learning, but I'm also, you know, move on because I have to.
Man, I don't want to get to that story. I really do not want to talk about this. And it's one of those stories where if I don't talk about it today, it will not jump the day. It's one of those topical stories that either I do it or I don't do it. So what do I do? Let's see, 11:44 Pacific. I didn't get to everything that I wanted to get to. The phone lines are lit. I don't know. I mean, like, there are times when a story crosses my desk, and then I kind of on some level know that I've got no choice. No choice but to lace up the boots, get to the front of the line, eat the grenade. This is one of those times. Because when a headline like this one is sitting right there on a tee, I know that you animals have already pulled the driver from the bag, and it's grip and rip time. All right, fair enough, clones. I've always been about, if I give you what you want, it's bad for the show. But every once in a while, I should give you what you want. So here goes. O.J. Simpson denies conspiracy theory. He's Khloe Kardashian's biological father. That's the headline. Let me repeat that one more time, because that's not some satire from The Onion. It's a trending story on Bleacher Report. Quote, O.J. Simpson denies conspiracy theory. He's Khloe Kardashian's biological father. Now, before you rabid dogs start ripping apart that 72-ounce ribeye, let me rip the fire extinguisher from the wall and remind you degenerates of this. This is a sports radio program. This is not some DNA test talk daily talk show.
You are not the father.
Man, Maury. God, I love Maury. I love Maury. But that moment, you imagine that guy jumping up and down, running up and down the stage, like, I am not the father. Yeah, but that kid doesn't know who his father is, and his life is ruined, and so is the mother's. But my man is just like, I am not the father. Yeah, you've heard this ridiculous notion that Oj two-timed his late best friend, Bob Kardashian. And that explains why Khloe looks different than Kim and Kourtney. I've heard that. We've all heard that. Difference between you and me, I don't give a damn. Aside from it being speculation. And by the way, pretty disgusting speculation. Yeah, I'm sure Kourtney gets an enormous laugh out of hearing a bunch of strangers kick around the theory that a double murderer is actually her pops, her biological father. I'm sure that makes her feel great. Keep it up, freaks. Keep it up. The only reason that this conspiracy got dusted off yet again is because Khloe is expecting a child with Tristan Thompson and some soulless paparazzi asked the juice if congratulations were in order.
Congratulations in order?
For what?
We hear Khloe finally announced that she's pregnant.
Well, for Bob, God bless his soul, yeah. But
really?
I don't know for me. I don't think for me. I have nothing to do with it. Khloe and the girls were all terrific girls when they were growing up, nice and terrific. I think today they're still nice and terrific, except they've kind of added sex appeal to their resume. I'm happy for them. Congratulations to her. But trust me, I have nothing to do with it. I would be proud if I had anything to do with it, but I don't.
No.
God bless.
The only thing missing from that response was, hey, Juice, did you kill Bill Walsh? Yeah, thanks, Juice. Thanks for clearing that up. Now we can all go back to our normal days. Yeah, Juice, except for me. Except for me, Oj. You know what happens when you pay some loser from Splash News to follow you around Vegas and ask you these types of questions? Somebody like Bleacher Report writes about your response. And you know what happens when Bleacher Report writes about your response? Then my audience sees it. And you know what happens when my ghouls see it? I have to spend 5 minutes wrapping a straitjacket around the entire audience and then 3 hours ducking and diving tweets and emails that do not belong on my program. At this point, I'm practically rooting for a nonviolent parole violation. Can we just throw Stinky back in prison already? Because life was so much easier and so much better when this dude messing adult diapers was in the slammer. Juice, didn't you promise that you would live a quiet life when you emerged from the can? Then go ahead. Go ahead and make good on that anytime you're ready, because you're making my life and my job a lot more difficult. Way more difficult. Austin just brought me a couple of emails. Dear Jim, tell your producer to take the day off tomorrow. I've got this. Open phones the first 2 hours, and then in studio, OJ, Chloe, and Maury freaking Povich. You don't even have to pay me for that one, Rome. Just listening will be enough reward. Phil in Missouri. Maury Povich is like a legend of the game. I had him on the show once. He's so great to talk to. He is a funny, funny dude. Very talented man. Hey, but the whole notion of trying to determine whether or not, you know, like a live paternity test. And this guy running up and down the set like, I am not the father. I mean, isn't OJ this close to having that happen anyway? Like, believe me, if somebody put a check in front of him, he would do that. Romy, quick question. With all the kids that Lil Alvy has, is there any chance that he is Chloe's daddy?
You are not the father.
No. I can say that firmly, Roland in Pittsburgh. No chance. Not like IRA's book where 99% is true and 1% is not, and you figure out what the 1% is. No. With 100% certainty, I can say Alvy is not Chloe's pop. Roland in Pittsburgh. I mean, I guess you could even argue that, like, Chloe is like the cool Kardashian, I guess, kind of. I don't know enough to know, but I know enough to know that. But is she OJ's daughter? I don't know. I don't care. Why do you care? Who knows? Who cares? I know this. I care about my show. There you go, clones. Thank you very much for the great reaction to episode 19 of the Jim Rome podcast. And thank you for your continued support of the TV Timelcast on CBS Sports Network. Check back here for more tomorrow. I will see you then. I'm out.